Maura, how are we?
We are absolutely fantastic. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for coming on. You were requested by a number of my clients, so that's why the doors are opened that way. So thank you so much for coming on.
Not at all. Delighted to come on. And I'm absolutely what's the word? Chuffed or whatever that people actually asked, because that's lovely to hear. I know that that happened on another podcast, so I hope that whatever they're looking for, I'll be able to deliver.
Well, we know you will, because I've seen your content. And I know we were kind of talking off air about the content. It makes you feel calm watching you doing the content. So I think that's the main goal from a lot of your information. For anyone that isn't aware of what you do and all that kind of stuff, can you give us a little bit of an elevator pitch?
I'll give you the quickest snapshot of me, Moira Geary. So Moira Geary, born in Limerick, out in Cappamore, as we were just talking earlier, you know, their area, grew up and with a huge interest in why people do what they do and what makes people tick. When I left school, I ended up in nursing. Just happened. I don't know if it was something I would have chosen, if there were more choices at that time. However, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant training. And in that training, it gave me a huge opportunity to observe people in their worst situations and in their best, because I was a midwife as well. And I was fascinated at how people responded differently to those situations. And then many years later, then through, you know, I nursed and was having a normal life and got married and went to live in the UK. And in the UK, my eyes were opened. Remember, we're back in the 80s now. So it was before there was any such thing as a holistic therapy in Ireland and or anything new or different in terms of even, you know, things like NLP, neuro-linguistics, personal development, any of that kind of stuff. So I got absolutely stuck in and did a whole load of trainings because they really helped me with everything that I was interested in. And then we came back home, and I stayed at home with the boys, and I ended up in a very, very distressed state myself. So I got into quite an anxious state, and stayed there for about 3 or 4 years. And I really want to preface here, and I know I will talk about this when we're finished talking about who I am, about the whole thing and anxiety, because I'm talking about I had it actually at quite a severe level. But I don't work with people necessarily with it at a very severe level, even though obviously a lot of clients would say to me it actually takes the edge off it. But there are kind of four different sections in that continuum, but I'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. So I ended up managing and getting myself out of that anxiety. Unfortunately for me, counseling didn't work, and it wasn't that counseling doesn't work, it was I chose the wrong kind of counseling because I didn't really understand. And I also was put on antidepressants, which again, I don't have a problem with. The ones I was put on didn't work for me. They made me worse. And I think that all of those things are really important in certain situations, but not in all. So from there and finding my own way through, I suppose I learned and from my own experience, an awful lot of ways of how to manage different situations and manage different fears and worries and overwhelm, procrastination, self-sabotage, all of those things would be kind of the areas that I would work in. And then I started to share that with other people. And then they were going, oh my God, this works or that works or the other works. So that's kind of really where I started. And then in 2009, when we hit recession, my husband worked in construction. He was a subcontractor. So all of the companies that he worked with all went out of business. And we also had a family, a really big family traumatic experience as well. So he just needed some time out. And I said, you know what, Jeff, I'm doing this as a hobby. Let me see what we can do. And I decided to give it a go and increased the number of clients that I was seeing one to one. And then I decided to put the business online. And that was way back in 2009. So I was quite an early adopter of online training, and it's grown ever since. So I do a bit of online. I've run online programs. I don't see clients one to one, but I do run events, and I also train people to do what I do. So I created a full modality where people can actually set up their own practice and they can work as a QTT practitioner. So that's kind of the me in a nutshell.
It's amazing to see that you've turned kind of like a massive event with kind of like the recession into a positive, and you're kind of saying, let me try and figure this out. Yeah,
Well, I
but
remember when the decision was made, I remember saying to Jeff, look, I give this go. And he was going, and again, it also is that, you know, I would have a very much a growth mindset. And he was kind of saying to me, well, look, there's a recession and people won't have money. And I said, Jeff, I'm not focusing on the people that don't have money. I'm only focusing on the people that need help and that might have some money. And if I can help them, then we go for there. And I had to keep my focus there because otherwise I wouldn't have done it. Yeah.
And I think the big thing is it is focusing on, there's always a niche that you're kind of looking for and looking after, if you know what I mean. Like there will be always people that are struggling more financially, and there's going to always going to be people who have more wealth and more, that's just the way society is at this stage.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, the gap is just too big at this stage.
With that, because I would feel very strongly about that and feeling, oh, well, if I'm just offering, you know, stuff that people have to pay for, then maybe I'm, you know, ignoring people, and that's not okay. So I do an awful lot, and always have done a lot of free trainings that are available. I mean, I've got, as you know, part of my brand, what we always say is that no soldiers left behind. So we do the 7-day positivity project is always there for people. It's free to download, and some people have said it's literally changed their lives. And then for a lot of people, they start there and they think, oh God, I want to work a bit more with her. So it's a nice introduction, but it's free, and there's a, you know, free community that goes with that. So I like to think that we'd look after people regardless of whether they can afford to buy a program or whether they want to stick with the free stuff. Yeah.
I think that's rare. And I think it's probably stood to you as well, because sometimes we can easily just go, right, stick a price on something and look for money and all that kind of stuff. So that's a credit to you as well. I know when I was going through the kind of content and stuff that you've been kind of putting out for a while, there was a lot of questions, and I was kind of trying to relate it as much as I could to the person that sits in front of me when I'm talking to them through clients and stuff. And a lot of the struggles that people have aren't their own, I would say. I think there's a lot more people struggling out there than probably needs to. But one of the big things that a lot of problems and a lot of people can struggle with is the area of stress. How can we navigate this whole thing of when you feel you're actually like, almost it feels like you're drowning in stress, and that overwhelmed feeling that people have?
Okay, so I'll give you a couple of little techniques and tips on that. And before I do, Shane, if you're okay with this, just to explain the continuum to people so that they can kind of work out where they might be, because that will definitely direct them to where they need to go and get some help. Okay, so the continuum, it's the mental health continuum, basically. And I mean, that's what basically what we're all about, is looking after people's mental health. And when I say a continuum, it doesn't mean that you're actually, you know, in, there's four quadrants to it. And it doesn't mean that you're stuck in one. We slide between them all the time. But the first one is thriving. And that's where people are really doing well and they're feeling really well and they're really in a good positive state. And then the second one would be surviving. So that's where most of us are. So there's things happening and we're reacting to life, and a little bit like what you're saying there about your clients with stress. Some of your clients will be in reacting and they'll actually be in thriving at times as well. But in the reacting, it can be, you know, quite intense reacting where they feel that drowning in stress. And some of them then might go into the third area, which is struggling or injured. And that might be that the stress gets so big that they move into a place where they literally can't cope and that they will need some intervention. And at that point, I'd be saying to them that they would be needing to look at maybe some counseling, psychotherapy, talk to their GP and all of that. But in the first two, I would say that's really the area that I would work in, would be the first two. But sometimes I help some people in three as well, and, you know, but as long as they're being taken care. And then the top one is crisis, or where people reach illness. And that's where we're talking about mental health disorders. So when people talk about anxiety, they kind of think it belongs to the whole continuum. It doesn't. We need to be really clear that I can feel anxious in the morning because of something that's going on today. That doesn't mean I have anxiety. That means I'm having an anxious response to something that's perfectly normal. But if somebody has a generalized anxiety disorder, they need to be seen by a psychiatrist or psychologist. So it's really important that people understand that continuum. And I would think that even from people listening now, we can relate that to stress as well. So in the stress that you're asking about, a lot of your clients will be between thriving, surviving, and probably sometimes move up to struggling. And they probably move up and down through those three. And what I'd be saying to them, first of all, is just to be aware of which one you think you spend most time in. And from there, that'll tell them really a little bit about the degree or the intensity or the seriousness of their stress. And often, well, a lot of the time, the stress is related to something external. So it might be something in our worlds that we feel we can't control. And it might be the case we can't control, but the thing, but we can control how we can, you know, respond to it or react to it and keep ourselves nicely regulated. And also, when it comes to stress, if there is something that needs us to be in a stress state at that time, I had one last year, the year before, I was recalled for breast check, and I went into fight or flight for 3 weeks. I needed to be in fight or flight for 3 weeks because that was a perfectly normal reaction to something that was quite serious. So I would, I mean, okay, I did use techniques to help me manage that, but I wasn't trying to push it away, because that would be toxic positivity. So we really need to be mindful of that. So if people are drowning in stress, there are a couple of techniques that we can do. So to understand the techniques, when I'll go through them in a moment, but to understand them, first of all, one of the biggest issues around, this is just my own experience and from my experience with clients, in relation to stress, is that it's the feeling that we feel when we're, the stressed feeling. It's not the situation, it's what we're feeling. And we feel things at their highest height when we are what we call associated into the problem. So what that means is that when we're thinking about the stress, because obviously when we have stress, we have thoughts in our heads. The thoughts are probably running as really fast movies. They're probably in Technicolor. They probably have a volume running really, really high and loud. And we're in the middle of that movie. So when you're in the middle of the movie and all of that is going on and you're running all the scenarios in your head, your autonomic nervous system is going to react to that. So your sympathetic nervous system, which is the one that is the stress related one, is going to be firing off loads of adrenaline, loads of cortisol, and you're going to feel the jittery feeling, or, you know, that awful feeling in your tummy or whatever it is, but you're going to be feeling it physically in your body. When we're in that state, it's not a great state to make decisions, to work things out, to take action, or the correct action, to be discerning. And it can be a really, really destructive feeling. And actually, if people stay in that stress state for more than 6 or 8 weeks, they do end up going into that struggling phase and further on into crisis. So to help us to disassociate from those thoughts or feelings. So in other words, if we imagine that we step back from the problem, people, again, when you think about those sayings of years ago, you know, just take a step back. People probably didn't know what they were getting somebody to do, but what they were getting somebody to do is to say, well, just take a step back from us. And what we're doing is we're stepping out of the problem and we're pushing the problem out in front of us. So what we've done there is disassociated ourselves. In other words, when we see the problem now, we're not in it, we can see it out in front of us. The moment you do that, your body will start to regulate. So your stress levels will immediately start to decrease. And there's a little technique called problem, not problem that I teach around that. And that is hugely beneficial for anybody that has anything that they're stressing about, which would be the technique basically is that you notice how you're associated into the problem. You notice the thoughts and all the things that are going on, how fast everything is moving, the sounds, how loud it is, all of the rest of it. Then you check in and feel in your body on a scale of 1 to 10, how intense is the feeling of stress? When you've done that, you take your step back. But how you do it is you imagine that the problem is your hand. And I often will put my hand up in front of my eyes and say to people, when you're only looking at those problems, all you can see is the problem. You can't see left or right of it. And then I get them to move the problem out in front of them. So when the problem's moved out in front of them, it's not that we're pushing it away and pretending it's not there, because that'd be really another toxic positivity thing. So it's important that we recognize it's there. But the minute we do that and then get people to check in again, what's the feeling like now? How much has it decreased by? From there, we look at the problem and notice, I say to clients that when we look at a problem and we're looking in it for the solution is never in the problem. The solution is in what we call the not problem. So it's everywhere else except for their hand. Well, actually, what I often do is get people to draw a black dot on a piece of cardboard and they have it stuck up on their office wall, so that they can use this anytime they're overwhelmed with stress. And when we look at the problem is here and we know the size of it, and then we're looking at the not problem and we ask ourselves, how many people on this planet had a similar problem and how did they resolve it? The answers are all outside of that. So it's not just outside of the room. It's outside of, you know, the village you're in, the town you're in, the county you're in, you know, the country you're in, even the planet you're on. It's much, much bigger than the problem. So what we're doing there is just doing a kind of a contrast of problem size. And that helps us also to reduce the stress around it. And when we ask ourselves the question, well, what did other people do? Then we can actually think logically about different ways and different things and different action steps we can take to actually start addressing the problem. But the nicest thing about it is that the feeling is actually reduced. And that's the most important, because actually that's all anybody's ever looking to do, is to change how they feel. People think that we set goals and we want all of these things to happen in our lives because we want those things. No, we don't. We want the feeling we believe those things might give us. So all we're ever doing is trying to change how we feel. So that technique is really powerful in helping people that have a lot of stress going on in relation to problems. Now, some people might have 3 or 4 problems, and that's where it becomes very overwhelming. So what I say with that is, instead of the black dot, what you can do is get A4 sheets of paper and get a number, whatever number of subjects are going on that are stressing you, and put those on the wall. And I would be writing lists of all of the different things in those scenarios that are really stressing you, so that at least they're out of your head. And when they're out of your head, you know, your subconscious mind goes, okay, they're documented, they're somewhere, and don't let them back into your head. Because once you're disassociated from them, you can actually think straight logically, and you can, you know, progress through them one by one in order of priority for handling them, if that makes sense.
You mentioned the C word in there, which is the control thing.
Yeah.
Why is that so important to humans?
Control.
Yeah.
Because when we think about our minds, and this is just from experience of, you know, working with clients over the last, whatever, 25, 30 years, that as humans, we're sort of hardwired to keep ourselves safe and to keep ourselves secure. And it's just part of, you know, survival. It's about survival mode, really. And because of that, that's where the control element comes from. So if I can control everything, then I can keep myself safe and I can actually, you know, breathe and relax. But actually what people believe to be control. So if you see, and I absolutely get this, because I always say I'm a recovering control freak. I always wanted everything to be in control, and particularly around my children, and, you know, always trying to control everything. And then I used to nearly say to myself, well, I'm in control now. And I'd be in this really tense state where everything was okay for a couple of minutes. But actually, that's not control. That's actually fear of not being in control. That's what that feeling is. Whereas a lot of people think that's what control is. It's not. Control is actually the most gentle, relaxed state. So if you think of, you know, wanting to be in control and fear of not being in control, and you feel that feeling in your body, and if I said to you, if you just drop the fear and just be in control, people will actually get much better results if they do that. Now, I know that's not the easiest thing if somebody's hearing that for the first time. It's not the easiest thing to do. But with some practice, it really is a fantastic trait to be able to develop for yourself, to be able to drop that. And there's loads of things that you can do, like practice, you know, even body scan meditations and things like that, just to get used to those feelings in your body and get used to what's actually going on. Because I can tell you, it's always the feeling. But that would be the main reason why we want to control is fear of not being safe on some level. And that could be physically or it could be emotionally.
Okay. Brilliant. There's another, I know a control thing is a big thing that a lot of people, well, we all want it. It's just whether it's a positive method that we go down the route of, because I know for particular, if I'm working with clients, the control mechanism that a lot of people will bring in then is potentially food as the mechanism to deal with that outcome that is happening. So it's coming up with different methods to interrupt the pattern for them. One of the other things that is an element of control is in relation to the self-esteem piece, because why is it that people can struggle with that self-esteem piece? And are there any kind of like one or two or even three steps or tips that you have to kind of increase that for someone if they're kind of walking in the door for the first time to you?
Self-esteem, and I don't really like blaming our conditioning and our background, but basically when we're born, none of us were born with low self-esteem. So just be for people to be really clear on that. So it's not something, now I know that there can be some genetic factors. We know that now, but we didn't know that actually up to a few years ago. But that doesn't mean that's going to affect necessarily means that it will affect your self-esteem. I would like to generalize and just say that in general, we're not born with low self-esteem. So it is a learned behavior and it will come from a lot of conditioning. So conditioning from things like, you know, that you will pick up, you know, messages that you're not important because let your sister or your brother go first, or, you know, don't be greedy. Children, well, I suppose not nowadays that children should be seen and not heard, but you know, that sort of thing. Like, you're and all of that sort of stuff. The more we hear that between the ages of 0 and 5 or 7, actually, Morris Massey would say 0 and 7, the more that's actually ingrained in our subconscious and in our neurology, that is actually, you know, the okay, let me track back. So when we hear all of that stuff and we absorb it. So we absorb it through our subconscious mind. We filter a lot. So we filter, we delete, distort, and generalize a lot of things. And when we're having that experience, as we're deleting, distorting, and generalizing, the information is coming in through our subconscious. And what we do next is put meaning on it. So it's the moment that we put meaning on what that means. In other words, that thing that happened or that thing that was said, when we process the information and bring it in and we decide on a meaning subconsciously, by the way, so nobody be beating themselves up, then that meaning will help to create a notion or an idea, which will develop into a belief system and often can go into a conviction. So it just, for example, if somebody was living in a house where there was a lot of anger and irritation around from the parents, and you had two boys, siblings growing up in that house, those two boys could turn out completely differently and in terms of their self-esteem, even though they would have experienced the same thing. And the reason for that is it's not because of what happened, it's how they processed and the meaning that they put on it and the decisions they then made about how they were going to be in the world. That's actually what will create and determine how we turn out. Now, I know that even a child that might be quite confident and then in maybe teenage years that might get bullied at school, or they might have a situation where they get very hurt in a relationship, all of those things are going to have an impact on our self-esteem. And to be honest, none of us really were armed with the tools that we have nowadays at that age to help us with that and to show us how to manage it. And it's really interesting. And my boys are very happy with me sharing things, you know, me watching, you know, even my own boys going through, you know, their own relationships and whatever, and even around jobs and careers and things like that. And I always say to them, you know, you're going to feel absolutely crap for the next 3 days, but just sit with it. It's perfectly normal. Stop trying to make yourself feel better. You know, if they might have, you know, I remember one time one of them was going for a job, totally believed he had it. And even at 3 o'clock interview, it was more or less said. And then at 5 o'clock, got an email to say that he hadn't got it. And I've said to him, you're going to feel absolute crap for the whole weekend. So just sit in it and just know that you will learn to process how to be disappointed. As it happened, the following week, he got a much better job, which was great. So there were so many life lessons in that. But I know that when that kind of stuff happened to me as a kid or as a teenager, my parents, it's not that they were actually very forward thinkers, but we didn't have that relationship where we could talk about that kind of stuff. And just for a kid to know that it's perfectly okay to feel disappointed, to feel whatever. It isn't a reflection of you as a human. It's just the fact that, as it happened with that job, I believe they actually didn't fill the post. I don't think they had the money to pay the person, but that doesn't really matter. It's just that was an opportunity for his self-esteem to be really knocked. So really important to, you know, to be aware of that. And I suppose there are so many different situations, and, you know, for us to really delve into it, we'd have to really go into different situations and how you would handle or manage it. But one of the biggest, I suppose, general ones I would say to people is that usually anything that's happening outside of us that is knocking our self-esteem in relation to other people, it's never about us. If somebody is trying to put you down, it's never, absolutely never about you. It's about them looking to feel significant on some level, or them looking to be safe. So the quickest and easiest way for them to feel safe and secure and significant is to try and make you feel insecure. So it's not about you, it's about them. So don't let them take your power. That's really important, you know. So that would be one kind of slant on self-esteem. You asked me in relation to, you know, things to help you with it. What I would say is that if you're aware that you have low self-esteem, I want you to notice that it's not in every area of your life. So it might be in one area or two areas. So in other words, it might be in your career. It might be in, you know, intimate relationships, or it might be in friendships, or it might be whatever. And yeah, it can trickle over. You know, they can trickle around them. But what I would say is that there are some areas in your life that you are really confident in, and that if somebody crossed a line or, you know, broke a boundary or whatever, that you'd be very quick to be confident enough to say that and to be okay with it, particularly if it's around somebody you love or maybe kids or friends or whatever. So I just want people, first of all, to be aware that they have that resource within them and that they have confidence and an okay self-esteem in some areas. So it's really important that people take some time to have a look at that first and see where are those areas. I know we have the others, but just where are those areas? And then what I would say is that to start doing things that will help to grow that self-esteem just a little bit more by more by more by more. And it's almost like a muscle, where you're proving to yourself that you actually are capable and that you're okay. And that even if some friendships don't work out, maybe that, you know, if it's something to do with friendship, and I know that this happened for me, a lot of the friendships that I had 20 years ago, I'm not close to those people anymore. And it's not that they were bad or I was bad. It's just that the friendship just fizzled out and things that I wanted in life were not similar to things that they wanted in life. I could have taken a lot of offense to that. And I know that too, over the years, that some people would have moved away from me as a friend because they would have found me too overpowering. I get that. And my personality definitely was overpowering and I didn't have the emotional intelligence to know that. But that doesn't mean that I'm a bad person. And that doesn't mean that I've got to hide under a rock because sometimes I can be, you know, that little bit, you know, my personality can be that little bit big. That's me. And I love that aspect of me. I do rein it in a bit now, but I'm aware of it. But it doesn't mean that I'm bad or that that's negative, you know. So it's really important that people really see that we're all made of amazing, beautiful qualities. And sometimes we're a bit loud. Sometimes we're a bit annoying. Sometimes we're whatever. But that's just the way it is, you know.
It's interesting because I remember hearing a saying of like, you may not be someone's cup of tea, but you're someone's cup of whiskey or glass of whiskey.
That's really funny, Shane. I read that somewhere yesterday.
Yeah, it's it always comes into my head when self-esteem comes up or when you're, because I read something during the week of like when, if you look at your friendship group 5 years ago, probably not many of those are in your friendship group now. Because I can relate, like I gave up drink like 7 years ago. I had drinking buddies.
Yeah.
And if you look at those, I'd say there's probably one out of whatever it was that I probably talked to every few months, every 6 months, but it's not as much as you were every like weekend or whatever it is. So yeah, people will float in and out of your life, but it is that important element of like, it's not a you problem.
Yeah.
Exactly. And not taking it that personal attack, because we can feel attacked, we can feel lonely, we can feel isolated. But I think it's important to understand that there could be something else going on for them. And it's not always about us. Like there are traits that we all have that may not be positive or may not be, or maybe negative, but I think it's important to realize that people can float in and out of our lives and that's okay. Another thing that people can really struggle with is the element of boundaries. And boundaries is one of those, it's almost like a curse word. When you start to say no to people get offended.
Yeah.
Why do we struggle to do that and bring those in? And why are they seen as selfish?
Okay, so in my experience, why we struggle to bring them in is there's a couple of reasons. First of all, if the relationship has been like that for a long period of time, it's very difficult to break the habit, even though it is possible. But then I'll just give a little tip on that in a couple of minutes. It is possible, but it can be quite a difficult thing to do because there's an expectation there. So that's that. The second part of that question is why do we find it difficult is, again, a lot of that would be conditioning. So conditioning to be kind, to put other people first. You'd be seen as a bad person if you put yourself first. You know, I mean, even if they have to say on the, you know, the airplanes to put your own oxygen mask on first, if they've actually to tell us that, it just shows us how we have it all mixed up. You know, as I always say, this beautiful saying from Lisa Nichols, when, you know, that they say you can't pour from an empty cup. So you fill your own cup up first. And what she says, you let it overflow and then you serve from the saucer.
Yeah.
And like that is so powerful if we really get that. And I have to put my hand up. It's only really in recent years that I've really learned about that and how even this morning, you know, there were a lot of things going on that I felt I needed to do for other people. And I just said, no, my walk was too important. That's literally only in recent years where there are non-negotiables that I have now, and regardless, they come first, you know. So that's another reason, but that we are conditioned to think that, you know, we have to do the martyr thing and, you know, put everybody else first, which is really, really difficult. But if you have a situation or if you've got relationships where that is, well, first of all, no, let me just, before I tell you the how to. So the other thing that I always would say to people, and particularly to myself, because I just love when I find something that I think, oh my God, that's interesting that I do that and why I do it. So if you feel that you're doing a lot of that, where you're, you know, not you're finding the boundaries difficult, et cetera, or you're finding it difficult to say no, ask yourself, what is it? Because there's always a reason for us to do something. So in other words, there's always a positive gain for us in everything that we do. So if we are looking to please people all the time, what is the payoff for us? And I know for me, that payoff would be that I wouldn't be seen to be a mean person or an unkind person. Another one for me would have been, I would have done those things and people pleased, because then I was more in control. So controlling other people. So that was like when I looked at it, I thought, oh my God, look at me. Here I go. This control freak. So I was wearing myself out doing things for people. But at least if I did them, then I knew they were done right, done the way I wanted them done. And then I was in control of the whole situation. So I would say to people, just have a little investigation, ask yourself and be gentle with yourselves and be compassionate with yourselves when you're looking, and actually do it with a bit of a laugh. I mean, I literally laugh at myself when I find things that I do and I'm thinking, gee, Moira, for God's sake, come on now. You know, what are you doing that for? So I'm very compassionate with my human when I find things. So that would be really important, I think, to know why you're doing it. Because often in the acknowledging of your reasons why, it can be, well, that's a bit stupid that I'm doing it for that reason. Yeah. And that could be enough to stop people. But if you're people pleasing a lot and what you're finding is you just say yes, I just use this little statement that I find really, really good. And there's a couple of reasons why we would put the statement in this order. But the statement would be to say to the person, just leave that with me and I'll get back to you. So you're not saying yes, no, you're not saying anything else. So if it's particularly if it's somebody that the habit is the minute they ask, you say yes and you go do it. So if you just take a little pause, and again, I'm not saying that you will remember to do this every time. It's going to take a bit of practice. But if you just say, leave that with me, what you're saying there is, I'm not saying yes and I'm not saying no. And the second part is, and I'll get back to you. So in other words, I need a bit of time to think about this. I might have something else that is important. And it's a might have. It's not a definitely I have or that I'm whatever. So what that'll do is it'll actually start to break the pattern a little bit for the other person in terms of their expectation. Now, you might decide to go back, and you know, when you say I'll get back to you, or you might say I might get back in a couple of hours, or I'll be back to you tomorrow. But in that time, they're kind of sitting there and it's all very different and new for them because you're not doing the thing. So that gives them that opportunity to, or the opportunity of the pattern to be broken a little bit. Then you can come back and say, I can do that and I can do it for you, you know, today or tomorrow, whatever. It's absolutely fine. And you can go back and say that, or you can say, I can't do it for you at the moment, but maybe I could do, you know, I could do something else on, and it's just cutting across it. So just even by having that gap, it's really important in terms of the other person's expectations and the fact that you are not saying that I'm putting myself first and I'm leaving you behind. But what you are saying is that I'm just not available at the moment necessarily to do it. But it's done with respect.
I really like that. Because I think when I've spoken to people pleasing previously with kind of counselors and therapists before, one of the big things that kind of comes from it makes you feel, as you said, you mentioned the word control there again, it makes you feel in control because you're trying to control the reaction of getting accepted and validated by making you feel warm and fuzzy. So that selfless act is actually a selfish act to ourselves. Yeah. So it's a little bit ironic.
Shane, I have news for you. Every act that we do is a selfish act for ourselves. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And we're either looking to feel safe and secure, a sense of variety and excitement, a sense of significance, a sense of love, a sense of expressing ourselves or progression and growth or feeling connected. That's all we're ever really doing. And there's always a positive intention behind our behavior, always for us. Without exception.
I think the big one that when people are looking for like that significance thing is like when you first meet someone brand new, what's the first question someone asks you? It's like, what do you do? And it's trying to pinpoint themselves in this the status chart. And like, as soon as someone asks me that, I check out.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not here. See you later. I find it such a insignificant, kind of boring question. I just it's the least interesting thing about someone, if you know what I mean. But people can make it an identity for themselves. The big F word when it comes to things and change is the word fear. Why do we get so paralyzed by it? And how do we change that?
Okay. How we get so paralyzed by it is that, again, if we go back to that continuum. If we're in thriving at the first corner, we don't experience it that much because everything is good in our worlds. If we move into the surviving, we're going to feel it a bit because things are not so secure. And it's usually around that, it's fear of things not being safe. And then obviously when we go up into the third section, which is up into struggling, in the struggling one, that's usually the one where people have the most fear. So it might be related to something that's actually happening and something that's really real and that it's important that we have a fear reaction to. And I'm all for that. Okay. But then there are obviously loads of techniques and tools that we can help that will help us to manage that with breath work and meditations and mindfulness and all sorts of things. But that's about fear of something that's happening in the now. Very real, very relevant. And I'm all for it. And then all for managing it. However, if we're in fear about things that happened in the past that are not relevant to now, then that's a waste of time. And if we're in fear of things that might happen in the future, again, the same thing. It's not relevant to what's happening now. So it's actually another waste of time. So it's really important for people to remember to come back to the moment now and what actually is happening in the now. So just so that people can see that pitched in those three areas. So if it is stuff that's the fear thing, a lot of people's fears is coming from past experiences. So they're holding on to remembered memories from their past, but also remember that every time we have a situation in our past or there is a memory of an event, we would have felt something in that event. So if we felt something that is fearful or fear-driven or a fear reaction, when we think about the memory, we will be able to elicit some form of fear on some level in our bodies. And the reason for that is that our subconscious is not good at discerning between reality and imagination. So a lot of the time, people spend a lot of their time in the now looking back on past memories and recreating fear responses to things that are over and done with and gone. Now, I'm not saying that we for a second would dismiss any of those experiences because there's wisdom to be gained from all of them. However, we can gain the wisdom and it would be important then to let go of the fear response to them. That's freedom, basically. So that is really, really important. So the reason why we're fearful now is because we're trying to stay safe. It's again, the same thing.
Yeah.
We're trying to stay safe based on those past experiences. And the reason why we'd feel fear in the future is we're afraid that something won't work out the way we want it to work out or that things could go wrong. It's the exact same thing. I think it's important that people kind of can see that where their fears might be coming from. But if it's something that's in the now and it's actually happening and it's something that it's important that you're fearful around, then yes, it's important that we feel those feelings and we manage them well and that we base our behaviors or our actions, you know, because the fear will help you to make decisions, you know, to stay away from something or move towards something or whatever it is. So that's kind of an overview of that. Now, I don't know if I've answered your question very well. Have I? Is there?
No, you're pretty bang on where we're coming from regarding fear. I think one of the big issues I would see with people that are working on a daily basis is that element of fear, but it's based off the self-belief part of it, that they don't necessarily believe that they can get to the goal.
Right.
Whether it be weight loss or freedom from food, improving the relationship with food. So rather than fully jumping in, they're going basing things off all the previous other attempts that they have done as a way to control the outcome. They never really jump in because they don't want to let go of those food rules. They don't want to let go of those things because they know the issue isn't necessarily the food, because food is never the issue for people. It's how they feel about themselves or see themselves eating those foods. Yeah. So if they don't believe themselves that they can't do it from the off, but that's also based off every attempt that they haven't thrown themselves into. Every other attempt, unless they actually change or jump in a little bit more. I'm not saying what an awful lot of people will do is jump in head, feet first. Like they're trying to get a quicksand. They stick their head in full at the beginning. That's not going to end well. And that would be in the form of restriction with food. That's what most people try to do with weight loss. But if we actually stop struggling, you can get out of quicksand. And that's essentially the way that people can control the outcome a little bit more.
Yeah. No, I get that. There was something I was going to say now on that, and it's gone clean out of my head.
Happens.
Yeah. Anyway, it'll come back to me in a moment.
More, I know there's loads there that people can navigate. I think the biggest thing for me that I've taken that is a lot of the stuff is coming from an area of kind of the control piece, and control is a good thing, but it can be a negative thing as well. The people pleasing thing. And I think if someone was looking to find you right now to kind of work with yourself or look for your courses, your free resources, where would people be able to find you?
I'd say to people, you know, either go to my website, moiragiri.com, or I'm quite active on Instagram now. It's just all kind of blown up over the last couple of weeks. I'm active, have been for years on Facebook, but on my website and on Instagram, there's a free 7-day positivity project where there's loads of little techniques and tools, and people just click on the link and they can sign up for that. They can unsubscribe at any time. There's nothing for sale on it. But I do open programs as well, and I'm getting a bit of pressure from people now on Instagram at the moment because there's a huge number of new followers. So I probably will open. I've membership that I open, and I might do that in the next couple of weeks, we'll see. So that's where they can find me. And one thing, the thing came back to me, so basically what I was thinking there was that when you're talking about your clients and they're having an issue with, you know, their belief about, you know, food restriction and all that kind of stuff, so the best way to approach, you know, almost like loosening a belief and taking some of the strength out of it is to find other scenarios where that's not the case. So other evidence to prove that to be wrong. So I'm sure that you have lots of other clients that were like that, and that, you know, that turn around. I'm sure you do share that with them, but if any of your clients are listening, that's where you would start. Is they have to see that it's possible. Because if it's possible for somebody else, it's absolutely possible for them. Mightn't happen overnight, but it absolutely is possible. And because there is such a huge conditioning around food and food restriction and all the stuff that we've been fed for, you know, excuse the pun, for, you know, decades on weight loss, that it's very hard for people to change that mindset.
Yeah, people can get addicted to that restriction. I think when I kind of, and I have like client interviews with clients who have kind of come through the process and kind of share their journey where they started from. And the biggest thing that I take out of, and what other people are taking out of, more importantly, is what they take out of it is their problems aren't their own. That person has overcome them. As you said, it's kind of like, well, this is possible. But sometimes we just need that little bit of a reassurance that this can be done. And as you said, it's not going to change overnight. If you've been thinking this way for 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, but we're in this dopamine nation that we're in right now where we just want everything now. But the irony of going for those quicker fixes, they take longer. That's the irony.
Yeah.
Like slashing your tires before you start to learn how to drive. Yeah. Doesn't go down very well. No. Maura, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and sharing so many insights. I would 100% follow Maura. Like the level of content and the comfort you get from watching Maura's content is amazing. So thank you so much for coming on.
You are so welcome, Shane. And thank you so much for having me. Thank you.